Welcome to Trying to Communicate with Kayla. Today, I have the honor of speaking with one of my twins in life, one of the cutest humans I have ever met and seen on planet Earth. Her name is Caitlin, and I love her very much. Welcome, Caitlin, to the podcast.
Hi. You're so sweet. I love you.
I've always had a dream to, like, be one of those introducers or, like Ryan Seacrest, like, introducing Caitlin to the stage. You know.
Best introduction ever. Like, I rock you guys, obviously. Kayla just gave me the best intro.
Well, how are you? I've missed you.
Yeah, I've missed you too. I'm really good, really good. I just got out of my massage, so I'm super relaxed and ready to do this.
Oh, yes. Ready to talk about murder.
My favorite topic. Honestly, one of my favorite topics.
Does that make us serial killers, or I don't think so. There's like certain podcasts where they only cover cold cases. I can like provide a list for you, but it's my favorite to research and try to figure out who did it. Like, today we are going to discuss first, like, Caitlin and her story and how her and I became friends and like how we met and all of the things. But then second, we are going to debate whether or not OJ is innocent. Before we get ahead of ourselves, Caitlin, why don't you just give us an introductory statement into all things Caitlin? I can't wait for this.
All things Caitlin. Well, okay. So I'm Caitlin, I guess. I'll just start with how me and Kayla met. We work for the same company, and she is in, like, my upline. So I always really looked up to her, and I always really watched her stories. I thought she was so cool and so sweet. And then I finally got to meet her, and it was just like, I just love her. We're literally like twins. The direct sales gig, that's what I do full time. And I have a dog. Well, it's my boyfriend's dog, but he loves me more. His name's Joe. We just bought an Airstream camper, a 1977 Airstream, and we're renovating it to live in it. So that's kind of what my life is right now.
That is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
I don't really recommend doing it. I might change my mind later, but I'm going to be honest. It's been terrible. And y'all, if you do it with your boyfriend, you guys be very strong in your relationship. Like, it's... Oh, it's taxing, let me tell you.
That's amazing.
So friends, I have a confession to make. I have always been interested in making money while I sleep, which is why I started my network marketing business, which is why I started this podcast. And I love meeting people who like to talk about the same thing. So that's why when I met my new friend, Shane, that's all we talked about. I was so impressed with him that I wanted to know all of the things he was talking about. So he started to tell me about how he started his e-commerce business, his real estate business, and how he started to sell things through Amazon. And honestly, I was floored. His knowledge is something that I believe everyone should have their hands on if they want it. I put Shane's contact information in the bio section of this episode. He will give you advice on anything and everything from sales to, like I wanted to know, how to make money in your sleep. The first talk is obviously going to be free, but after that, we shall see. Make sure to contact my friend Shane for any of your business or marketing or whatever kind of advice. He's awesome. Now, back to the episode.
Let me just jump on in. When I thought of who to do my first murder episode with, I had to think long and hard because, like, with Crime Junkie, which is my favorite podcast, I will be referencing them a lot in my theories and, like, in our timeline and stuff like that. But in my favorite podcast of Crime Junkie, they talk a lot about murder cases, obviously, but they also have like a lot of little jokes intertwined where it's not as heavy as like Dateline or whatever would be. But also there's another one called My Favorite Murder, and they have like a lot of dark humor in it. And I was like, I have to pick someone really good to do my first crime episode with, because I don't want it to be like super dark, but I also want like to tell the facts and like say how it is and be professional about it and honor murder. The thing. Like, you know, it's murder. It's like a heavy topic. So, and I, for one, like, let me just put a disclaimer out there. No, neither Caitlin or I am an expert in this whatsoever. We literally did research from other documentaries and online, and we will cite our sources as best as we can because, oh Lord, but
don't come at me.
So let's start off with this timeline. What do you think?
I've got it all written out by the minute. Are you ready?
Oh, perfect. This is great.
Timeline, I got it. So we'll start out. I've got 30 p.m. That the Mezzaluna, I might be chalking that up.
Mezzaluna.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they were there. They, as in Nicole, some of her friends, her sister and mother. So they're at dinner, having dinner at 6:30 p.m. That's where I got to start.
And why were they having dinner there? They were having dinner there because they were coming back from a dance recital or some kind of dance thing that the daughter was doing. And OJ was supposed to be there, but then he was uninvited and no one knows why. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going.
All right. So after 6:30, they're there from about 6:30 to, I've got on my timeline, 8:30 to 9. Because at 9:30 p.m. we got Goldman is going back to the restaurant to get her mother's glasses. She left her glasses, and I'm just gonna assume these are like really expensive glasses. So he just like wants to do a nice thing, gets the glasses, and comes back home.
So apparently Nicole called. So we're gonna collaborate our timelines, I guess. Then so apparently Nicole called and was like, "Hey, I left some glasses there. Like, will y'all just keep them there?" They were like, yeah, sure, because it was, like, small town, whatever. Everyone knows who freaking Nicole Brown Simpson is. So, duh. So, they're like, yeah, we'll keep them there. But then she hangs up and is thinking, and she's like, wait, I kind of want them. So, she calls the restaurant back, and she's like, do you have anyone that, like, at the end of their shift, run by and bring me the glasses? Because that would just be the easiest. And Ron, being the sweet little soul that he was like, oh, my gosh. I volunteer as tribute. I will take them to Nicole.
Well, to add in, Ron was also friends with Nicole.
Yeah. Because she would go to this restaurant all the time. It fits into all of this. Like, she was a regular. And being a waitress in my former life, I totally remember the regulars.
All right.
So that's 9:30, I think, right?
Then I've got, so between 9 and 9:30 p.m., so in the middle of when this is happening, OJ and his friend Brian Kalen decide they're going to go to McDonald's. Let me just say something. Good if you're OJ Kalen, and Kalen is his friend at the time and
lives in his guest house.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's also trying to be like a movie star too. Kind of like a failed try, living with a celebrity who was in a couple of movies, like in his backyard, and they're hanging out, going to McDonald's, and they come home at 8:45. And Goldman leaves with the glasses. So he's at the restaurant, he leaves at 9:15, and he leaves between 9:58 and 9:50 p.m. with her glasses. Nicole's neighbors hear her dog barking. Now, I want to say not like barking normal, like screaming, wailing barking. Distress, kind of a bark. Their neighbors hear it. At 10:25, Alan Park, which is the limo
driver. OJ's driver. Yeah.
Goes up to the house at 10:25. OJ has to catch a flight that night.
And he goes to pack. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a red eye that's already planned. Like, he's going to Chicago for something that, like, this has been planned for forever. So.
He wasn't running away.
And from, like, 10:25, I think it's to like 11 or like 10, What time is it until?
So it's at 10:40 is, well, that's, I'll mention that in a minute. 10:40 to 10:55, he buzzes OJ Intercom many times and doesn't get an answer until 11. He answers at 11.
And then that's when they pack up the car and go to LAX to go to Chicago. Okay.
11:45, he gets on the plane to Chicago. Yeah.
Okay, so when is it that the neighbor notices the dog that, like, they think has mud on them? When, what time does that happen? Is that after it, is that at like 11 or like 11:30 or like
that they saw that when the dog came out? Are you talking about when they actually see the
dog?
So
there's like, so apparently there's a family and they find the dog who has like blood all over him. So they take him inside to clean him off and they're like, holy shit, it's blood. And then they,
12:10.
Oh, okay, perfect. So that makes sense then. So then they take the dog for one more walk, and that's when the other neighbors are like, wait a second, I know that dog. That's Nicole Simpson's dog. Wait. And then that's when the neighbors, the other neighbors that found the dog are like, oh, yeah, we found the dog with all of this blood on it. We thought it was mud. Holy shit, you know? And she was like, wait, Nicole has kids. Like, I need to go. This is crazy. And so that's when they all go over there and find
the body.
Nicole and run.
Yes. Packed up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Because this is a murder subject, do you want to kind of talk about how they were found? Trigger warning, we're about to talk about some gross
big trigger warning. Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so the craziest part to me is that Ron's overall injuries were worse than Nicole's, because Nicole, like, it looked like she had a couple of defensive wounds and she was almost decapitated, but like, really, that was it. Like, she was also stabbed a couple of times. But yeah, Ron was stabbed and had his throat slit and all of that. Yeah, all of that nasty stuff. So obviously lots and lots of blood. And obviously, just want to point out, someone super strong has to be able to do that, to like almost decapitate someone with a knife, you know, right? Like, that's crazy. Okay. But anyways, keep going with your timeline. I just wanted to point those couple of things out.
I want to add in, go a little bit back before the body.
Okay.
Comes out, is at 10:40 PM, Cato, the man living in his, in the back shed, he hears three large thumps on the outside of his wall. And he's quoted on saying that these thumps were so loud that he actually thought like it was an earthquake, like the whole wall was shaking. And he goes out to see like what the heck's going on out here. And that's when he finds glove. And then, you know, fast forward to what we were saying before, OJ isn't answering the door. He's got a flight. He's got a flight leaving at 11:40, and he doesn't answer the door until 11 o'clock.
He said it close.
Well, the bodies are found. Police are called. All of that jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, they come out to Nicole's house, witness the murder scene. They're like, oh my God, what's going on? And at 5 a.m. is when the detectives decide to go to OJ's house, because they're thinking, well, they know this is OJ's ex-wife. They have kids.
Oh, wait, pause. Can I cut you off for a second?
Yeah.
I want to talk about a couple more things just about the scene.
Oh, okay.
Because I think this is crazy. So there were no footprints. The officers go to process and make huge mistakes, which we'll talk about later. I don't want to talk a lot about them right now, but I just want to point it out in the timeline that, like,
damn,
from
LAP.
The get-go, they were messing up left and right. Then, and like, just to like give you some examples, I'll tell more examples in my theory, but, and maybe even your theory, who knows, but they cover Nicole's body with a blanket from her own house. And like, some people suggest that maybe that was because, like, so many photographers and press and news people were around, and so they had to do it just really fast. But like, are you for real that not one person in your crime scene bundle has a f-ing blanket? Are you for real? Like,
or at least like the bag that you zip them up in, just
yeah, like, I don't know, that was just, that's huge to me. And then the other thing is that one, they like, well, that was one, but two, they didn't wear shoe covering booties around the scene. So like, everyone's just walking around tracking evidence everywhere. I don't know. It just goes to the point that the officers were making huge freaking mistakes. But anyways,
also at the time is when DNA evidence was really just starting to be discovered and used in court. It was still relatively new, and this was the biggest case it had ever been used in. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to assume, since it was relatively new, and seeing how crappy the LAPD took care of the crime scene, they just didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to add in that it's a celebrity, a very well-known celebrity. So go back to the timeline, 5 a.m. when the detectives decide, we need to check on OJ. They've got kids, they've got family, everybody knows that they're connected together. So they decide they're going to go to OJ's house.
Well, and just to point out, at this point in time, they really were just going to notify him. Like, OJ was known, like, he had history with the cops, not for domestic violence, not, I mean, he did have that, but it wasn't known. He more so had history of hosting pool parties and for the cops.
He was like, the cops.
Yes, yes. And so basically they only went to notify him. They weren't even going to do anything at this point in time. But yeah. Keep going.
Yes, he was not a suspect at this point. Mm-hmm. So go over to his house, and that's when they see some more evidence.
And everything changes.
It all changes. Then they're like, well, let's get OJ back here because looks like he had something to do with it. They find blood prints on his property. They found on his Bronco, there was blood smeared on the outside as well as on the inside. And OJ's not at the house. They go in. They don't know he's in Chicago. So they go and try, and nobody's answering the door. And they see all this bloody evidence. So they go in thinking maybe OJ's hurt himself. And that's when they find more evidence. They find a bloody sock with Nicole's blood all over the whole bottom up to the ankle inside OJ's house.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, bloody socks are important.
Yes.
Ha ha ha. Sorry, I keep going.
Only one was found. So one bloody sock was found. And correct me if I'm wrong. The hat, they found a beanie with hair fibers in it. That was also found at the house. Or was that at the
crime? Well, and so again, like what you said, we have to keep saying that because I feel like people that listen to this now, like we have to put them into the mindset of being back in 1995, y'all.
Yeah.
Imagine someone saying to you without you knowing that it's a fact that like there is a certain way to find out evidence about people because of fibers and certain DNA that they leave behind that is only specific to you on the planet. Like,
yes,
that is kind of overwhelming markers for people to believe. And so also another thing about the hair thing I want to point out is that when they're saying like hair matching or whatever, yeah, it was said that it was matched to OJ, but do you know how they matched it back then?
How, Kayla?
They just looked at it and said, oh.
It's the same.
It's the same. And I don't know if you like have seen two black people that have very similar hair, but like
looks the same to me too.
It's gonna look really similar. And so really what all the evidence that they had was that it was an African-American, not that it was OJ, but they were like, oh, it's
at
OJ.
Least for the hat.
Yes, exactly. Yes, for the hat.
But they just assumed that it was OJ's because he was the African-American male that was living in the area.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
So, but I just wanted to clarify. But yes, so they find the hat. They find the black, the other black glove.
Bloody footprints. Bloody socks.
They find a lot of blood.
Yes, they're finding a lot of blood at OJ's house. So it's not all of it's not just at Nicole's house where the murder happened. Finding stuff at OJ's house. So then
they also find Kato. And Kato is like, Yo, what's up, dude?
Popo's here. What's going on, fam? He's thinking OJ's having another barbecue.
I don't know. OJ's in Chicago and we hung out last night, got some Mickey D's, but like, I don't know what y'all are talking about. Like, so that's when they call him and the police call OJ and tell him what happened. Mm-hmm. And he heads home immediately.
Let's go back.
You want to say all this stuff?
Yes,
okay. Go
his
for
first
it.
First response. The police call him and tell him the love of his life, the mother of his children, had just been brutally murdered and almost decapitated. His first response and question was, who killed her? I'm sorry, Kayla, but if somebody called you and said that your boyfriend was brutally murdered, is that the first thing that comes out of your mouth?
Well, and I'm totally going to pull a crime junkie saying right now because I feel like it needs to be said. You never know how you're going to react in times of craziness or, like, in times of shock or in times of, like, oh, my gosh, you know?
But statistically, and so, to be honest, people get upset.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it's normal. I'm just saying I have to, like, play devil's advocate.
I agree with you. I don't know really how I would react, but I just found it very peculiar that he wasn't sad. He wasn't asking how she died. He didn't ask any other questions about what happened.
Jacob
he just said he did.
If Jacob died, I would definitely be like, what? Oh, my gosh. How did it happen? Like,
exactly.
You know who did it? Like, I need to come home right now. Like, what do I need to do? I'm freaking out. Like, I would definitely
He was chill. He kept his cool. And that just, it rubbed me the wrong way.
And in that time of them hanging up the phone with OJ and hanging out with him next, they basically obtain a search warrant. And so OJ comes home to a household of family and friends who are very supportive of him.
Thinking his wife was just murdered, giving him support and big old hugs. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I want to point out something that is super interesting that happened and a character in the story that I feel like is important. Robert Kardashian.
Yes, I as well think he is important in this case.
Yes.
Why is he there?
Well, so they're besties. I just found that out. I didn't know that. I didn't know how close they were.
No, they weren't close at the time. Chris has been noted in saying that at the time of the murder, they weren't that close. They had used to be besties, but at the time of the murder, they weren't that close.
I have a story that's, well.
According to ID Investigation Discovery.
That says, basically, that Robert Kardashian, this happened after Robert and Chris split. So all the three rooms for their girls, Kim, Chloe, and Courtney were open. And so there's reports that during this time where OJ didn't have anywhere to go, he went to Robert Kardashian's and actually stayed in Kim Kardashian's room before Kim Kardashian was a thing.
All right.
So maybe they weren't best friends. Maybe both things are true. Well, maybe they weren't friends. And then he was like, dude, like, and then
Kardashian
he calls and he shows up like,
being like always there for people. He was a very gifted, nice guy. So I could see them not really being best friends still, but OJ being on like a really tough spot and Kardashian be like, come on over, man. Like your family. Then they were like family. OJ was like an uncle to all of the kids. So I can see him being like that even if they weren't really best friends.
Yeah. But I do want to point out that like, so one, Robert Kardashian was there when OJ comes home and all his friends and family are there for support. And OJ gives him a garment
bag. A Louis Vuitton bag.
from his trip and then goes to speak, blah, 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 then goes to speak to the police. So
puts it in his car. Uh-huh. He puts OJ's garment bag in his car. That should be evidence.
Yeah.
And the bag was not found for a while. Kris Jenner, this was on Inside Edition. She was talking about the bag, and she was like watching the news. Everybody's like, "Where's the bag? Where's the bag?" And she's like, "Oh, I have the bag. It's upstairs. I wonder what's inside of it." And there wasn't anything in it but like toiletries and clothes. Why did OJ want to give? Why was that so important for him to give to Robert Kardashian to put in the car instead of taking into his home where the rest of his clothes are?
That's interesting.
Very interesting.
That's a huge question.
Yeah.
Well, so after 4 hours of questioning, he tells them everything. He tells them the timeline. He tells them about the driver. He tells them about going to Chicago. But the only thing he can't account for is the time when he's quote unquote packing.
Yeah, well, and he's been quoted in saying different reasons. He never keeps the same reasoning to why he was late, where he was during the time. Packing, he overslept, he showered. Another one said that he was golfing on a with a friend in his front lawn. At 11 o'clock at night, you're golfing?
Which I think we can both agree that he is definitely lying here. Like, he definitely was doing something other than packing, because I don't know about you, but I know lots of men. And have you ever seen a man pack for even a week-long trip? It takes them 0.2 and a half
seconds. Oh, yeah. And they always forget stuff, too.
Yeah. So I call BS on the fact that it took him almost 30 minutes to pack.
I also call BS on him oversleeping. You're catching a really important flight and you didn't set an alarm.
Okay, so he can't account for his time when he was packing, but also they see a small cut on his hand. What do you want to say about that?
He's trying to tell the police that he cut his hand. Well, he had a couple of instances, actually. The first excuse that he said was that he cut it reaching inside of his Bronco to get his phone out of the car.
Which, I mean,
are those edges that sharp? I've never come across a car where I'm just opening the door like a natural human being and I slice my wrist open.
Slice!
Like, not even an hour later. If another friend asked him, oh, how'd you cut your arm? Told him a completely different story.
Interesting. After all of this, OJ goes to Nicole's funeral with their kids. Which...
paparazzi there and everything.
Which, I mean, okay. I'm going to play devil's advocate with this because there's so many people that shit on him for going. But, like, I feel like it may have been worse if he didn't go.
Yeah. I mean, why would you not go to the funeral of the mother of your children?
Yeah. I've never
constantly said was the love of his life.
Exactly. Yeah. I've never understood that part. And so... I just want to point that out. That doesn't really make sense to me. I feel like it was a you're doomed if you do, you do if you don't kind of deal. Yep. But then, okay, so June 17th. So this is how many days after the original
was it four
murder? Yeah. So June 17th, the LA district formally charges OJ with special circumstances, which basically means that it's including the penalty.
And gonna get his ass.
Yeah. And OJ agrees to turn himself in at 11 a.m. Does he do this, Caitlin?
He does not. He does not.
What happens? What happens?
He's got, you know, like you said, all of his friends over at his house and his lawyers, so they're hanging out, and he's coming up with this excuse and that excuse. He's taking a while to pack, and then he's got a shower, and it's like, now it's past 11, and they're calling like, yo, OJ needs to come in now, or we're going to come get him. And so his lawyers go looking for him, and Robert Kardashian is the one that finds him with a suicide note. Ready to kill himself with a gun. Oh, yeah. The quacks.
To evaluate his mental state.
Yeah, so they could probably get him on a lesser charge.
Exactly. And that's when OJ dips.
Yes.
And the famous...
Peace out, fam.
The famous Bronco chase occurs. Where
the
I think
slow Bronco chase.
How many millions watched live?
I don't know. It was worldwide. Everybody was watching it.
Everyone was like,
people
I remember
were out on like bridges cheering him on, like, go OJ.
Go OJ, free OJ.
Yes. It was like a parade.
Which, okay, another thing I want to point out and just kind of encompass, which everyone, I talked about it in one of my other episodes, the race episode, where I feel like so many people feel like race is just now a big thing, but that's not true. It's been going on for a really long time. It's been an issue. In 1995, y'all, the cops versus the African American community.
Oh yeah.
It was like bad. Divide was, yes. I would argue, bigger than it is right now, because just based on the fact that it was a huge uproar. So many cops were getting away with stuff. Like, at least now there are some cops that are getting.
Was very fresh at that time. The African community was still very much feeling the Rodney King situation that happened with the LAPD.
Yes. And so at this point, OJ is also very prominent in the Black community. He's done a lot. He's reformed a lot of stuff for a lot of people, a lot of organizations. Like, they're like, wait, what? Why are they going after OJ? What's going on? That's why there was so much confusion and like, yeah, I just feel like I need to say that. So,
well, the year that this happened,
1995.
I don't know why I have 94 written here. I knew that wasn't right. 6% of people thought that he was guilty. Only 6. And then you fast forward, the last stat I have is 2014, which it could be higher now, but 83% in 2014 thought he was guilty.
Oh, yeah, that goes right along with my stats that I was telling you about. Perfect. He's running, that's when Rob Kardashian reads the note from OJ that sounds like a suicide note, and we're not going to read it because it's so long, like we'd be here for another 10 minutes.
It's pages long,
but I will put the link to it in my notes for this episode if you would like to go read it. But I just want to point out that at the end of the letter where OJ signs his name, he puts smiley face.
A smiley face. I'm about to kill myself, but I'm signing my suicide note with a smiley face. What? I don't even sign my family's birthday cards with smiley faces, Kayla. But let's
do Caitlin.
Well, I'm normal, so... I want to also add in the suicide note, since we're talking about it, I have a quote from it that really kind of bothered me. And it says, if we had a problem, referencing him and Nicole, if we had a problem, it was because I loved her too much. I'm sorry, obsessive and gaslighting much?
Yeah, and known to have abused her? They have as proof of him beating the crap out of her and domestic violence and domestic abuse. And
yes. And he was even found guilty on one case, and he pled no contest, meaning, yeah, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just, that bothered me out of his suicide note. The whole note was just very, it didn't come off very suicide note. It was just very weird and scatterbrained. Y'all should read it.
Well, it's funny, and we'll talk about it later, but in court, I think it's crazy how the prosecution wasn't even allowed to use a lot of the calls as evidence. Like, I think that's crazy.
Well,
but we'll get there.
Do we think that's crazy? Because that happens all the time these days.
I mean, it makes me sad. Like, I feel like if they were to use the I don't even know if they're hundreds. I think it was around 60 or 70. I'm not sure about that.
Too many.
Yeah, just too many. But too many calls.
And photographs.
and just horrible things that were going on in this relationship. And so with that being said, OJ finally goes home.
Finally surrenders.
I would honestly suggest watching the speed chase too. I'll put a link to that too, because it's interesting.
It's comical. It's comical. It's not a speed chase. He's going the speed limit as everybody else on the interstate. And I want to add in, he wasn't, for people who are listening, maybe y'all don't really know the details, he wasn't alone. He didn't drive the car alone. Yes, he had a friend drive with him. His friend was the one driving. OJ had the gun, and OJ was saying, like, you got to keep going or I'm going to kill myself. So he's telling him, like, I'm not going to stop. He said he's going to shoot himself. He's got a gun. Like, who am I to believe he's not going to do it? He wasn't by himself.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So that's crazy. Oh,
and then, sorry.
No, you're fine. Keep going.
In his phone call on his way at the end of the chase at home, he's quoted in saying, I'm the only one that deserves this. When he's talking, the police are trying to calm him down, like, de-escalate the situation. They're like, nobody deserves this. Like, you don't deserve this. Turn yourself in. Let's just stop this. He's like, I'm the only one that deserves this. I don't. And they just stops.
Mm.
Like, very guilty. Very guilty. And he had, I want to add in, not only did he have a gun, he had a passport. So it looked like maybe he was actually trying to finally flee the country. Should have done that in Chicago. But he also had a fake mustache. Who's going to go in the airport with a fake, like, see OJ with a fake mustache and not know that that's OJ? like a dollar store fake mustache.
And like we said earlier, the DNA was so new back then that no one really believed in it. And no one really thought that it could be super accurate. But also, Furman stuff starts happening.
Yes.
So Mark Furman is basically the guy that found all of the evidence. He found the bloody glove. He found the hat. And he's also a super racist.
Racist, guys. So like racist. Documented facts, like it's in writing.
Do you know, like, all the stuff about the guy that recorded him, and he basically was telling stories that could be taken as real, but could be taken as not, but, like, most likely weren't real, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all of these accounts of just racist, horrific.
Yep.
Oh, it's so sad. But all of the evidence that he provided for the prosecution was basically deemed useless because
he is a racist.
Yeah. And he also, just to be funny here, I think it's hilarious that he pleaded the fifth against planting the evidence against OJ because
I know. Why do you need to plead the fifth if you didn't plant anything, sir? Just say no.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It's fine. But this is when we can, like, kind of talk about the dream team, because if you're not familiar with how courts work, I'm not going to educate you on it. Their plan was to have OJ try on the gloves, but the prosecution catches wind. And do you want to kind of talk about this? Because I think this is probably one of the funniest moments in the whole case.
Talk
about the
gloves. The
prosecution majorly up.
They majorly screwed up. Well, Robert Shapiro, a genius, I must add, a very good lawyer, very popular at the time. He knows what he's doing. I'll put it that way. Shapiro, like you were saying, caught wind that they wanted to do this. So he kind of starts at the beginning as if they're not ready, as if the prosecution isn't ready to make the defense think, all right, we've got this. And it just really went down from there. So they have the glove. And I want to add in before saying anything, this glove was frozen and thawed multiple times before OJ tries it on. The famous try-on video. It's comical. I don't mean to laugh, but, I mean, he's trying on a glove with, like, blood on it and stuff. But watching him put on this glove, Kayla, like, I've never seen a human being put on a glove the way he did, with all of his fingers completely sprawled out, Plus the fact that I know for DNA reasons, they had to have him put on a latex glove, but mm-hmm. latex, it doesn't slide easily with leather. They're leather gloves. So it's not going to go on easy. It's definitely not going to fit properly when your fingers are all, I'm doing it right now. I'm just spreading all my fingers out.
I wish people could see you. It's great. Look at this. Rah. Well, and all of what you're saying happened, and then it freaking backfired. And the famous quote comes to be, if it doesn't fit, you then must acquit.
Oh my God.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
OJ, fun little story. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual case, but when he was in jail for another crime, I'm sure we'll talk about later, he was using the same kind of saying for other things, like the same rhyming scheme. Like, it was a joke to him, too.
I love it. That's like what, that's probably one of my favorite parts of the case.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. That's what she said. Why does case is over. That?
That's what she said.
Basically, then, on October 1995, the jury acquits. They listen.
can we talk if they listen? Well, it's the only fact. If it doesn't fit, we must acquit. They told us we have to acquit. Let's talk about the jury, though. Let's talk about the makeup of the jury. Because Darden, one of the attorneys, he's quoted in saying, with the police background, bringing up the police background, that bringing that into the case, and this is what he says, quote, it will only do one thing. It will upset the black jurors. It will say, whose side are you on, the man or the brothers, end quote. And right now, they're very upset with what happened with Rodney King. So this could be kind of a payback, like, maybe I thought he did it, but I'm going to say not guilty because of what's happening in my community. 8 of the jurors were African-American. 1 mm-hmm. was white. 2 were mixed. And 1 was Hispanic.
The whole trial took 10 months, eventually. And in 4 hours, they come to the decision of OJ being not guilty. And this is where the fun really starts. The popular opinion, which I would say is Caitlin's opinion, is that OJ is guilty, mm-hmm. but because of shitty prosecution tactics, dirty mm-hmm. cops, dirty defense system for OJ, that's why he's free. That's why he's being said as being not guilty.
He got away with it not because he could.
Yes. But in the other, like, 15, 10% of America's opinion,
you.
You said the stats earlier, it's like 83%. The other 13 to 15% is the African-American vote, and my opinion, which is that OJ is innocent and that somebody else murdered Nicole. So mm-hmm. I cannot wait to talk about this with you, but I thought you could give me, you know, just some bullet points on your theory.
You want me to tell you what I think happened? Okay, so basically, here's what I think happened. OJ's chilling at his house, and he's quoted in saying in the interviews and everything that his friend Charlie, this man named Charlie, is brought up many times from OJ, and a Charlie has never been found to this day. A man named Charlie in connection to either Nicole, Ron, or OJ has never been found. OJ mentions this man, Charlie, comes over to his house and tells him the shit going down at Nicole's. She's okay. She was very known for having parties and stuff like that. They're divorced at this time, so she's known for having parties and get-togethers at her house. And OJ is known to frequently go over there and try and stop the parties. And his defense is that his kids live there. So I get that. His defense is his kids live there. There shouldn't be mm-hmm. raging parties happening all the time. So mm-hmm. he says that his friend named Charlie tells him shit's going down at Nicole. So he gets up and goes over there, sees what's going on. And Nicole had been drinking, and that was proven with her blood alcohol test during the autopsy that she had alcohol in her system. He had been drinking, and OJ's trying to talk to her. And Ron's there. OJ sees Ron. And it one thing leads to another, OJ says, and they get him and Nicole get into a scuffle. He pushes Nicole. Mm-hmm. And Ron comes up, being the nice guy who just went to get her grandma's glasses. Well, you're not going to push this woman down to the ground. And he's ready to square up. And OJ says, as if in a karate move. So I don't know if this guy's had karate or whatever, but OJ sees him as a threat. And OJ says that he took the knife. Charlie's with him. Took a knife from Charlie, and then he blacked out. He said the next thing he remembered was waking up in Nicole's lawn, covered in blood, in a pool of blood, saying how horrific it was, and it clearly bothered him. You could see that he was clearly upset, but says that he blacked out from the time he grabbed a knife from his friend Charlie and woke up covered in a pool of blood. So what I
Interesting.
My theory, I think OJ did it. I think he's guilty. I think he has a mental condition or multiple personality disorder, something like that, in which Charlie is him. He's Charlie. And then one thing led to another. He blacked out because you're getting really angry, getting really upset. The mind does that many times. People have been known to black out right before traumatic events or just completely wipe that from your memory as if you did black out. And I think it has to do with his football career. So I don't know if he's looked into it much, but there's this particular brain condition from brain damage, and it's caused by protein buildup in the brain. And the only way to find out if somebody has this is during an autopsy. They have to, like, cut your brain open. Football players are very susceptible to getting this, and they think it's from just, like, constantly being, like, your head being knocked and being thrown on the ground. Doctors really aren't sure what caused it. But there are 3 NFL players who have committed suicide. All 3 of them had the brain condition of the protein buildup in their brain, which causes aggression, personality disorders, depression, mood swings, and very violent behavior. So I think that he is Charlie. He was in a very frantic, stressful situation, has this mental condition, this mental problem from the protein buildup, which causes aggressive behavior. One thing led to another, and he murdered her. Oh, cute kitty.
My cat just... Aw. Look at this. You can't see if you're listening, but my cat just came up and heard me from the other room and came over. Put his paw on me, like, hi, mom. Mom. And I was like, okay, come on. He patted on my lap. He just came and sat right on my lap, and it's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, he likes murder, okay. Too.
He does. His name is Enzo, and he's named after a car. And he just loves all things that are fast and furious and murderous.
On one hand, I'm really sad that restaurants and bars are opening up, but on the other hand, I'm really happy that restaurants and bars and cafes are opening back up because selfishly, I don't like to cook, and having other people cook for me is literally the best. And to be honest, I'm super, super excited because soon my friends Kevin and Al are about to open their new restaurant called The Iron Lantern. Details about where it is and everything about it are going to be in the bio section of this episode. But fun fact, 1, my friend Alyssa is dating one of the owners. If you like incredible food, come support the grand opening on the 22nd. There will be everything from breads to desserts to brisket to ribeye to chuck tender. Everything is as locally sourced as possible, and I'm so excited about it. Come in to taste the co-owner's food. Fun fact, he was actually a featured chef for the Wilmington Restaurant Week, not once, but twice. Mention my podcast, Trying to Communicate with Kayla, 30 days from the opening date to receive a free dessert and coffee. You're welcome. Now, back to the episode.
But
that's so, my theory. I think he has, because he's alive, has that brain condition, because he was known to be violent with Nicole and known to have outbursts and mood swings. That's documented. After, and this was after his football career. So that's my theory. That's how I think he did it. And then he just got all frantic. I mean, you come to covered in blood, and then you've got like a plane to catch. Like, I'd freak out too and just act like everything's normal. Like, oh my God, hide the evidence, go to Chicago, and then try and act like that dutiful ex-husband, and maybe I'll get away with it.
That reminds me of the book that he ended up writing, The If. Oh, I get it. With the if being super, super,
let's
super.
Let's talk about that. Oh my God, that book, girl. That book actually is what changed the mind of one particular juror. There was, and it didn't give his or her name, but one particular juror said after he came out with that book, he completely changed his mind. He did it and was a clever criminal. When he was writing the book, so this is after everything, since we're on the book, it had been a while. It's after the Ron Goldman case, which he lost, by the way, and still owes them money, a lot of money,
millions.
They found him guilty, that he not guilty of murder, because you can't be charged with the same thing twice, but found him guilty in having something to do with it. He did something that led to Ron's murder, and they found.
Wow, him. This is a great little segue. Okay. Oh, so my theory, which I should just say, Britt from Crime Junkies Theory, because me and her are the same person, just like me and you are the same person, except for this little debate topic that we're having. But I think instead of me telling you like the actual theory that I have, I'm going to tell you some of the facts that I feel like go against his guilt, I think. Okay. And then I'm going to tell you my suspect that I think and why I think they actually are the one that killed Nicole and Ron. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
We've already talked about the huge racial issues that were going on during this time. We've already talked about, you know, OJ doing some questionable things that seem super sketchy. But I do want to say that, like, other people have too. Casey Anthony. And they have also gotten away with it. So I think really the perception that we have to be looking through, like, I always talk about the perception goggles. If you put on someone else's perception goggles, you would see the world in a completely different light or in a different way. The perception that we have to look at is through the cops versus the African-American perception. And so we can both agree that the police messed up. I already talked to you about the hair that,
yes,
quote unquote, matched OJ, but really, like, if they redid DNA evidence testing today on the same hair, who knows if it would have been the same, because they just did the matching test. They didn't actually
do DNA. Like,
take it. Yeah, exactly. But I think in conclusion, the biggest part to me is the socks found at the scene. That's why I made a big stink when we were talking about the socks at the beginning. I was like, the socks are important. So I just want to run a little alternative theory by you. So let's say that I have killed Nicole and I'm wearing these socks. You know that the second floor of OJ's house was covered in white carpet, okay? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you think that the blood would be like all over the carpet?
No. I would take them off before I got in the house.
Well, okay. So even if that's the case, in all LAPD searches, they film to prove that they didn't, like, make any property damage happen, whatever. You know that in the original video that no socks were at the end of the bed. Do you know that?
You know, I actually didn't even pay attention enough to see if it was there.
Yeah, it's not. And then, randomly, later on in the investigation, a picture resurfaces and the socks are there.
So let me go back to the carpet, the white carpet talk. The prosecution, if that's the case, like just like what you said, it would be a point for you, right? Okay, mm-hmm. I would just take off the bloody socks. But when the analyst reviewed the socks and did evidence testing, DNA testing, all of the things, the socks were completely soaked, which means that a foot couldn't have been inside of the socks. And the blood that was found on the socks had a preservative in it, just like if it would have been frozen or stored beforehand, the blood.
When was the sock? Hold on. When was the sock found?
Okay, well, I don't know when it was found, but I do know that they waited 2 weeks to put the sock into DNA processing.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about all of that. They left a lot of the DNA in a car, in a hot car, for weeks.
Yep. Yep.
For those of you who don't know anything about DNA, it breaks down. So, especially in heat, that's why we freeze it. So, you've got mm-hmm. all this DNA sitting in God knows whose car, God knows where, for at least a week, if not 2 weeks at a time, just completely breaking down.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. At this point, I'm confident in saying that the police were tampering with evidence trying to make OJ look guilty. So, at this point, I'm confident in saying that. But that brings everyone to question me with, then who the hell
who did it
her?
Then, Kayla? Yeah, if it wasn't OJ.
And so my suspect is Jason Simpson, which if you don't know who that is, it's actually OJ's oldest son, second child. So it was his only son with his first wife, which mm-hmm. obviously they would have shared a lot of DNA, mm-hmm. right? So the hair in the hat would have looked very similar. You know, the hat that they found?
Yes.
The hair would have looked really similar if it was his son, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, another thing that you brought up that was very interesting about OJ was the football player brain disease.
Chronic, traumatic, I'm going to butcher this, encephalopathy. So CTE for short, encephalopathy.
Okay, so that's funny that you brought that up, because did you know that Jason Simpson had IMD, which is intermittent rage disorder,
yes.
which can also be called Jekyll and Hyde syndrome. So he took a lot of antipsychotic meds, and he also was, fun fact, a chef. And for every time that he would go work or do whatever, he would have to bring his own knives.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And fun fact, he was actually at the time out on parole, currently out on parole for assault with a weapon, and the weapon ended up being a kitchen knife.
Yes.
Another fun fact about his chef's duties was that he actually was supposed to that night cook for their whole family. OJ, Nicole, all of the grandparents, the kids, everybody. He was supposed to showcase his skills.
Oh, he works at Mezzaluna?
No. So he actually worked at another restaurant, which plays into the story of they ended up going to Mezzaluna, which was not the restaurant that he was at, right? That would have pissed me off, right?
Yeah.
If you're coming to my restaurant to see my skills, do all of this stuff, and then you just dip, there's no evidence, or no one really knows why they didn't go.
Why didn't they go and they didn't invite OJ?
Yeah, no one knows. And so that's a huge thing. And so I just find that super interesting. That's like one of the biggest parts for me. Well, so then the next thing I'll talk about is the murder weapon. I don't know if the actual murder weapon has been found
yet. It was found in 2014 in OJ's original house when they were doing the demolition.
Interesting. Okay.
A cop kept it as a souvenir.
Interesting. Okay. So this, I found something interesting where someone went to go look through Jason's storage facility. Like, you know how people have like the storage lockers or the storage rooms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a big box in the middle of it. Nothing else except for this big box. And in there was a knife that would have exactly matched like the ones that were used to kill Nicole and Ron. But you may be wondering, like, well, if they found the murder weapon, why does that matter? With chefs, you know how many knives they have, like replicas of the same thing?
Yeah, you could have many and get rid of one and be no big
exactly.
deal.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, so, here's what I want to add to that is OJ actually 3 days before the murder bought a knife matching the same description as what the coroner said a knife would be used. So mm-hmm. OJ did have a knife of his own.
Well, and it was funny because in all of the previous research, like he didn't have a knife before that. What you're talking about, he didn't have really any knives. Like, he didn't do that kind of stuff.
They couldn't find it. They couldn't find any house or couldn't find any knife in the house or anything. But he did have a receipt for buying one.
Yep. And then another thing I want to add for Jason is that everyone is like, well, Jason has an alibi. Do you know what the alibi is?
Okay, so, since you're talking about it, no, tell me.
So the alibi is him being at work. And you may be like, oh, okay, cool. He was at work. Like, he's innocent. On his time clock sheet, like time clock in, clock out sheet, he had written on the times that he was there and when he was not there. And it was a system that you would normally type with. And most people are like, well, like, did it work at the time? Maybe it just didn't work. Busted. It worked fine. It worked. It was fine. So he just decided today's the day
I'm going to write it by hand, even though I don't have to.
Exactly. Super, super fishy.
Probably not protocol.
Exactly. And so, I don't know. I just find that one super interesting. And then the last little bit to my theory, or I don't know, all of my facts against why I feel like he's innocent, is if you watch the footage, which I will put a link to the chase or whatever, when he pulls in, there is a moment where this black African-American boy walks up or like runs up to the car and he's talking to OJ.
Like, and he knows
him. OJ open the door and push him away and like basically collapse into the cops' hands. Did you know that that boy was actually Jason? Yeah. So
his son.
I believe that, I don't know, maybe he was sitting there saying like, hey, I know you didn't do it. I mean, it feeds into, what was it that you said? Hold on, let me see. Hold on, you said something super, oh, you said earlier a quote that OJ said that I felt, you were like, this makes him seem super, super guilty, but I actually think it feeds into my theory. He said, I'm the only one who deserves this. Why would you be saying that? I don't know how to put it in the only one.
Okay,
I'm
like saying the only
one who deserves, like trying to like take the somebody heat else. Off of somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the only one who deserves this. It plays into the theory of OJ taking the heat for his son, knowing that his son did it. And
so if this is what you think, that he was covering it up for his son, basically, like he's taking the blame, when did he even find out? When does Jason commits this murder, when does he tell his dad?
Funny that you asked. I since I talk about Crime Junkie all the freaking time, and since basically this whole episode is sourced from them and from a couple of other places, I thought I would play a little clip from
their episode of when they talk about.
Like wanting to cover up for your son makes a lot of sense. But if that's the case, when do you think he knew? Like obviously before he wrote that quote suicide note, right? Like while he was on the run, probably trying to figure out what to do. When did Jason tell him, or when did he figure it out?
And that's what I can't figure out. There's hardly any time for him to figure it out. There's hardly any time where Jason can reach OJ and be like, hey, I need your help. Other than like sheer like parental intuition. I mean, assuming your child had these issues or personality disorders, in the back of my mind, I have to believe he was like, this happened so close to us. How can it not be my child who has these issues? I mean, you want to think the best of your kids, but in this situation, like, everyone is a suspect.
See, I think that'd be like the farthest thing from my mind. If I knew I didn't do it, and it's like, it's her and this random waiter, and none of it would make sense to me. Also, where was he when his limo driver was trying to find him?
And that's completely unanswered. I get that.
Like, in my mind, I can get behind Jason only if Jason does it and then, like, immediately runs to his dad's house for help. Like,
and we don't know that he didn't.
I know. And I just, but like that is the only like scenario that kind of maybe halfway a little bit makes sense to me.
Okay. Yeah. I understand. I, it confuses me because of all of the evidence I have, but also the evidence that you have, it kind of makes me feel like he did it, Jason. But I also still feel like OJ did it. So it kind of changes my theory, I guess, from OJ, I'm not going to say he's not crazy, but OJ just losing his mind and killing these people for no reason, to maybe he didn't commit the murder himself, but he definitely helped cover it up, which still makes you guilty.
Yeah, no, and that's what I mean by, like, the whole, like, Casey Anthony thing. Like, I definitely think that he is guilty on some account, but do I think that he's the one that killed Ron and Nicole? No. I think that Jason that night was really pissed off because of all of the things that were happening. I think he was pissed that his dad wasn't invited to dinner. I think he was pissed that they changed restaurants on him. I think he was pissed because, and there's some suspicion that maybe he saw Ron and Nicole together and thought like, oh my gosh, no, like, she's supposed to be with my dad. Like, what? Like maybe
jealous almost.
Yeah, like, well, not like jealous.
Not for jealous maybe, like, in a him sense, but like jealous for his dad.
Yeah, like, you're supposed to be with my dad, like, and just lost it and went all Jekyll and Hyde on Ron and Nicole and went it. Because at the time, he was 24 and massive. Like, he was honestly in better shape at this time than OJ.
And OJ had been relaxing for quite a while. He wasn't the big old beefy football star that you think of.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. Like, I guess in conclusion, my theory is that Jason did it and OJ was just a really good dad and helped him cover it up. Because, I don't know, I can just totally see OJ, especially with the car part, like running up, like seeing his son running up and being like, dude, it's okay that they're gonna take me because I didn't do it. Like,
I'll get away with it.
Gonna be able to win. And how
and
selfless.
The only focus was on OJ.
And so honestly, I don't know if anything like this were to happen again, if it would go the same. I think he would have been charged.
Yeah, well, with all the DNA evidence, at least in this day and age, if it wasn't royally messed up and they only had OJ's DNA, because there was no other DNA mentioned being mixed that they couldn't identify, he definitely would have been charged today.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
And he just would have gone. And you think about it, I mean, every parent always says, like, I will be there for you no matter what. If you commit murder, I'm there with you. Like, that's – I can see it.
I can see. So with our debate's conclusion, who technically won?
Technically, Well,
technically,
mine was based
we both
on,
won, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I was like, technically, we both won. Mine because... was based on OJ, you're based on Jason, and now we've come to the conclusion maybe it's kind of both.
Yeah, I like it.
Well, brings everybody together.
It does. I'm so happy. But thank you so much for coming on, trying to communicate with Kayla.
Thank you for having me.
For coming on and for talking to me and for talking about murder and for talking about OJ and for, I don't know, just debating with me, because one thing I do want to say about debating is that I feel like people, especially our age now, are kind of fearful of it because they're like, my way or the highway. I don't want to sit here.
It turns into an argument. A debate isn't an argument.
Yeah, like I can have a completely different opinion than you. You can have a completely different opinion than me, and we can still love each other. And at the end of the day, like, I don't need to block you on Facebook for your views. I don't need to, like,
no, exactly.
Go do any of these things. And I just want to, for this podcast to be a safe space for differences of opinion. So thank you for being the guinea pig. In one
my
of these
honor.
Episodes. I love you so much.
I love you.
I can't wait for the next time I interview. It's going to be fun.
Yes, I can't wait to listen. Love you.
Yeah, love you too.
Bye.